Thanks for being with us, everyone, tonight. We're having a conversation about the inner workings of Hollywood with Bryce Zabel, writer and producer. We just heard one of the most beautiful songs I think Lennon and McCartney ever wrote, Across the Universe, advancing the idea that nothing's going to change our world. And I don't know, disclosure, that might be wishful thinking, because disclosure, depending on the form, might change our world in ways that we can't exactly imagine. We'll get into that, take some of your calls in just a moment here with as we continue our conversation in our final hour with Bryce Zabel on Coast to Coast AM. Bryce Zabel, I know your journalistic roots may not allow you to be too much of a pitch man, but I would imagine a lot of folks want to know how they could find the Dark Skies DVD series. Do you have any info on where they could buy it?
Yeah, no, I'd love to help people out. If they order it through the afterdisclosure.com website, on the right side, on the sidebar, there's a little banner that you can click, and you'll actually get it for half price of the list price, and you'll also get a little poster. When Dark Skies first came out, it was advertised with an American flag with a gray peering through the bars, and you get a poster of that. So it's kind of a cool thing, and I'd love people to be able to get it through that way, and they can get a good value that way. So that's afterdisclosure.com.
As I recall, you had sort of penned out a 5-year story arc.
We did. We were ready to go because we felt like we should, we felt the network might question our ability to sustain it. So we thought, well, let's overwhelm them with our superior firepower here, and let's show them we have five years worked out. Because if you think about it, when we went on in 96, what our goal was to move through time, starting with the Kennedy years, and catch up with real time in 1999 on the eve of the millennium. That was going to be our plan.
And do you want to give it away, but was it going to be a happy ending?
It was. Well, first of all, I wasn't actually going to end it. We were just going to catch up with the millennium, and we were going to keep the show going as long as we could keep it going. I personally, I'm an optimist. I think whatever is facing us, we're going to work it out.
You know, I see that this V, that series has been revived. I wonder if there's any interest in this. If the DVD does well, anybody coming in to talk to you about reviving this to start it up again? It would seem to be a perfect fit for maybe Sci-Fi Network.
It's a possibility. It would be unique. It's not often that a show can be off the air for a long time and then come back. Maybe we would reboot it from the very beginning if we did that. It would have to start with the DVD being a success, and so far it actually looks like it is a success. It's had a lot of orders on Amazon, so I wish them success with it. And Brent and I, we used to say when we got canceled that if we had to finish telling the story, we would hand out Xerox copies on the street corner. Hopefully we won't have to do that, but I'd take up the standard and finish the story quite willingly.
All the phone lines are full, but I have a couple other things I wanted to cover. One is the book, AD. Yeah. How's that doing?
The book's doing well. We're entering our second printing, and that's available through keyholepublishing.com, and that's Rich Dolan's company. We're very proud of it. Two things are happening. A company named Zentro Media is working with us to create an enhanced iBook version of it that will have an entire overlay on top of the book that is so special and so surprising. I don't even want to talk about it other than to say it should be out at the end of March. And also, the team that put Dark Skies together was my partner Brent Friedman and Jeff Sagansky was at Sony. They have a company together, Electric Farm Entertainment, that is partnering with Rich Dolan and I to adapt AD After Disclosure in television as a series. So we're working on that right now, too.
Excellent. And what about a newsletter?
Oh, we put a newsletter out for the new year just because I guess we, you know, thought it would be kind of fun to tell people what we were up to and what our plans were. So we do have a newsletter, but it's a one-shot deal. You can get it off the website if you want. And we just thought we'd... We want to encourage people to be, let me put it this way, a lot of books are just out there and then they speak for themselves and stand for themselves, and that's fine. But what we think about AD After Disclosure is it's got to start a conversation. We want to do whatever we can to encourage that, whether it's having people drop by the website. We have a lot of guests authors on the website and the newsletter, things like that, because we think the voices of the people discussing disclosure and how it's going to go is, A, not only going to make disclosure a lot easier to when it does happen, but it will hasten the day of disclosure, which we think is important.
Okay, we're going to the phones. I think I'm going to start with a first-time caller, Bobby in Huntsville, Alabama.
Hey, how you doing?
How's it going?
Hi, Bobby.
I enjoy your show. I just wanted to say you mentioned earlier sound, light, and gold.
Sound, light, and frequency. And then the guy left, showed us a sample of gold. It looked like
gold.
Yes,
well, that manipulates and generates matter. Genesis is a blueprint to a quantum physicist. And you can get on YouTube and watch particles being put in geometric patterns with sound. Tesla will tell you the frequency of humans. And gold should be...
Hey, Bobby, you're breaking up.
I'm having a hard time with the call.
That's okay. I can move real quick. I can repeat that. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Better, yes.
Okay. Well, Genesis is a blueprint for a quantum physicist. And Tesla will give you the frequency of humans. And the gold is the work of Lawrence Gardner. And you can watch sound being moved into geometric patterns in YouTube.
Hmm. Well, that's a lot for my brain to get wrapped around right now. It was a lot when I heard it the first time. But maybe by floating this concept on Coast to Coast, more people will come forward and we'll try to figure out what it's all about. Thank you for that input.
Bobby, we appreciate that call. You know, on the point about gold, I mean, I could see that gold would be a valuable commodity, whether you're from Zeta Reticuli or not.
It might be. Both Brent and I, over the years, have gotten together and looked at each other and just said, what do you make of that? And we still, to this day, don't quite know how to take it. It was an authentic experience, but whether it was a true experience, we don't know.
Understood. Wildcard line, Joe in Houston. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the disclosure. Back in the mid-70s, I was assigned as a squadron commander in the MAGIC program. And as such, I felt that it was important that I read through the regulations that pertain to the area that I was involved in. And the first manual that I read was called Air Force Manual 1-1. Okay, so you start at the beginning. And then you find out that there's a classified section that's not normally available. And in the classified section of Air Force Manual 1-1 is a complete checklist of how you deal with extraterrestrial biological entities.
Well, let's back up for a second. You were a squadron commander in the Air Force, but you say you worked for MAGIC?
Well, I was a squadron commander in the Air Force, but yet I was dealing with programs that were not necessarily Air Force programs.
So how did you know you worked for MAGIC? Did you have a badge? Did you get read into a program? Or
I had to sign all the secrecy agreements. I had to go through secret or well above secret security procedures. I had to waive all my constitutional rights.
But why are you confident speaking about it now, then?
I'm old. What are they going to do to me?
Huh.
You know, there's nothing they're going to do to me.
Anyway, we can verify what you're saying, Joe, now.
Well, as a matter of fact, I signed a hand receipt for one of the pieces of equipment that flew around. And on the bottom of it was the bill for it was $4.3 billion. That's what it was worth back in those days. I don't have any idea what it's worth today. After I signed in at my station where I was assigned, I had two secret supply accounts, and the base CIA rep called and said, "I see you've signed into your accounts. I need to talk to you." And so I went down and talked to him in his office, and he explained, if you can't get the money that you need for the things that you're doing to buy the equipment that you need, give me a call, and I'll have the money in one of your accounts the next morning. And I said, is there any limit on how much I can get? And the answer was technically no.
I'll go back to my question. How do we know that you're telling us a story that we can verify? I mean, is there anybody else that you worked with that you stayed in contact with? Is there any documentation you have that says you worked for Magic instead of the Air Force? Not saying we don't believe you. You know, just that kind of question comes with the territory.
I don't want them to come shoot me tomorrow.
Okay.
I can give you names if you want to have your screener get my number and whatever. I can give you names off the air, et cetera. That's not any big issue.
Okay.
So anyway, I was talking with this CIA representative, and he said, no, there's no limit to the amount. There's technically no limit that's placed on the amount that you can get in each of your accounts per day. But he said, realistically, probably not more than about $125 million per day per account.
Per day?
Per day.
What was the piece of equipment?
I don't know what to make of any of this.
Yeah. What was the piece of equipment, Joe?
I'd rather not talk about it.
All right, I'll tell you what. Why don't we get Gina to write down your contact info, and I'll get a hold of you, and we'll take it from there. Oh, okay, thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Jason in Santa Rosa, California. Good morning, Jason.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Jason.
Sure. Wow, that was an interesting call, Joe.
I'll be thinking about that one tomorrow, trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, really quick, I just was hoping you guys would get into the bigger picture. And talk about NBC and Rupert Murdoch. And I don't know if you've ever met him, and I know that he's kind of shady. But my question was, what do you think of the moon landings? Do you think those were real or fake? Because there's no empirical evidence. And they couldn't have made it to the Van Allen radiation belt without 8 feet of lead. And there's no dust on the lander. There's no blast crater. There's a lot of things. I mean, once you see 9/11, I mean, what do you think of 9/11? I mean, that's pretty movie, Hollywood. I think it connects to the whole how life is like a movie. You go to work. They sell us back our pain as entertainment. What's your take on that?
Well, maybe you phrase it this way, Bryce.
Yeah.
Could you, as a movie producer, produce the moon landing?
Boy, I think that would be, well, I mean, today, yeah, with enough money, you can produce anything. I personally think we went to the moon. I believe that. I do know that on Dark Skies, we literally were going to end the first season in our Bible that we wrote with Apollo 18, which it would be we ended with Apollo 17. We were going to go to Apollo 18 and go to the dark side of the moon, which I note, by the way, there's two movies being made in Hollywood about that right now. But I think we went to the moon, and I do not think 9/11 was an inside job. That's just my own opinion. I haven't studied the 9/11 situation in great depth in that regard, but I have. I'm quite convinced we went to the moon.
I'm right there with you, in part because of the credibility of some of the people who say that they were there, Dr. Edgar Mitchell being
absolutely
one of them.
I go with that. I do think it's possible that our astronauts who went to the moon saw a few things that were unexplainable or caused that are classified. That's possible, but I do think we went.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the call. Jeff in Compton. Good morning, Jeff.
How you guys doing?
Okay.
All right. Well, you know, it seems obvious to me, you know, Hollywood has an agenda, you know. I mean, the media, they have to entertain, but there is an agenda, right?
Well, the agenda is to make money.
Yeah, well, to make money, but you know what I mean? It seems like to me, but then the whole UFO thing could be a ploy just for them to make movies to keep mad so people will go watch them and then pay these high, ridiculous prices, you know, so that these actors can get, you know, $50 million, pop. But anyway, what I want to ask you, I had heard that, I read that Steven Spielberg, a lot of these top-notch people in the movie industry, that they were summoned in Switzerland this years back by the real higher ups, you know, maybe the Vatican or the Illuminati, and that they were summoned and given instructions to make movies that reflected their agenda. Is that true?
George, you probably heard that a little better than me. Can you restate the question?
Well, he's basically asking if there was this cabal who's collected a lot of major Hollywood players and told them what to do.
I am not a believer in that. I don't believe that Hollywood is getting told what kind of movies to make from anybody outside. I do think movie makers, you know, it's possible that there are friendships between powerful people and powerful people in Hollywood, and some of that filters around. But I certainly do not think that Hollywood is making alien movies because it is somebody's outside external agenda that's being imposed on Hollywood filmmakers. And I just don't see it. I don't see it empirically as I look around. I don't see it in my own experience. I think exerting influence is one thing. Giving orders is quite another.
Thanks for the call. You know, we had that Beatles song leading into this half hour, Nothing's Going to Change Our World. Have you thought about the impact of, obviously you have because of the book, Disclosure? I guess it all depends on what the disclosure was, but let's say it's a negative scenario.
Right. Well, if John Lennon was alive, he'd be 70 now, and he might have rewritten that song to Something's Going to Change My World. He saw a UFO, as you know, in 1974. Well, if disclosure has a negative or troubling aspect to it, it won't be nice. And even if it's neutral, it's going to cause some disruption. We talked about on your other show, for example, just that if you subtract the specifics out of the equation, we're going to have some disruptions in the first year after disclosure, just because some people are going to panic or hoard or, you know, do various things that aren't beneficial to the group as a whole. So we'll have to deal with some of that. But I think your question, George, you're asking, like, what if the reason that there might not be full disclosure right away is that it's more complicated, more weird, and more troubling than any of us can quite conceive right now.
Right, right.
And if that's the case, it's possible that we will look back someday after disclosure and say, I can see why they kept it secret as long as they did. It's possible. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. But we're still on a track for disclosure. You just can't have something this extreme happening for this long and not ultimately come to grips with it in some way, shape, or form. And the other thing that Rich and I have talked about at great length, and that he's quite a believer in, is we are leaping into their world. Our technology and our ability to perceive our place in the universe, whether it's through the Hubble telescope or whether it's just our ability to perceive our environment, is increasing so dramatically and so quickly that, of course, we're going to reveal them to ourselves.
Okay. Our conversation with Bryce Zabel continues, and we go back to the phones in a couple of minutes. Foreigner, Star Rider, appropriate song at this point in the program, Coast to Coast AM. We'll get to as many of your questions on the phone lines as we can in our final segment on Coast to Coast AM. Bryce, we talked about producers, directors, folks like Spielberg and their interest or level of interest in UFOs and ETs. What about actors? You must have worked with a lot of actors. I wonder if creative people like that are interested in the topic in general, unrelated to just a particular role.
I think a lot of actors are interested in it. They have less ability to influence what's being made than producers do, obviously. Because a lot, for example, producers can push a show forward because they're interested in the topic. An actor needs to appeal across the spectrum. Most actors aren't interested in letting everyone know that they are into UFOs. Dan Aykroyd is an example of someone who's crossed that line, and he's outspoken. And Richard Belzer has certainly done that. I've talked to a lot of actors who are interested in the topic, but it's the kind of thing you talk about on the set. You also have to understand, when you do a show like Dark Skies, then everybody knows you're the UFO guy. I have people telling me their UFO stories all the time because they think I won't judge them. So I get people telling me some pretty interesting stories all the time just because they know I'll listen.
You have stories about actors who, okay, I've got a role, I'm in this UFO ET movie or TV series, and they become hooked on it?
Well, I think that does happen. I don't think either Eric Close or Megan Ward, for example, who starred in Dark Skies, had given much thought to UFOs before they got cast, and yet I think they're fairly well versed on the topic right now. I couldn't tell you that they're firm believers. I don't think that they've probably bought into the study of it quite as much as Brent and I certainly did. J.T. Walsh, who passed away after the series, knew quite a bit about it, and actually, I believe he'd been in naval intelligence, so he actually knew some things that. That he would always imply he knew more than he was going to tell you.
He was a great bad guy, or good guy, turn bad guy, take your pick.
He's a great example. He plays Frank Bach in the series, Captain Frank Bach, and he's a good example of that. What we always say is that the bad guys never think they're bad guys. They think they're good guys. And I actually think he was. What we tried to set up is the dynamic of disclosure in Dark Skies. Eric Close, who played John Lonegard, represented the point of view of the people have a right to know. And Frank Bach, played by J.T. Walsh, represented the other side of that coin, which was you can't handle the truth. And those are two really strong points of view that have probably defined the disclosure debate, even within the cover-up over the years, as they've gone back and forth about whether it's time to come clean, and then some people, obviously what's been winning out over the years is the people can't handle the truth. Those days may be ending, though.
Jonathan, in my old stomping grounds, Berkeley, California. How you doing, Jonathan? Yeah. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I wanted to talk with the guy. You are telling the truth about people can't handle the truth. The truth is really simple, and it's right there. And the truth is that there is no such thing as aliens. There never has been, never will be. There's none of that stuff. For example, if I tell you that I'm a professor and I taught at this university and I taught at that university, what is the first thing that you're going to do? Hello?
We're here. I guess if we want to confirm it, we would call the university.
Exactly.
Are you in the bathroom, Jonathan? Did we catch you at a bad time?
No. Now, listen. Now, have you ever heard of Stanton Friedman?
Stan Friedman's a friend of mine. I'm sure George knows him very well, too.
Yes.
Okay. How long have you guys been friends?
Stanton Friedman and myself? I optioned his book... Top Secret Magic back in 1997.
When did you first meet him?
1997.
Okay. Stanton Friedman is one of the biggest frauds known to mankind.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you, my friend.
Listen to me. Have you went to like his website or Wikipedia and seen all the schools that he went to and he taught, he graduated, where he taught? Have you ever did that?
Yes.
University of Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah, and he also has other places that you can go, that he says that he taught at.
I don't think he ever taught.
I'm very confident that Stanton Friedman is not embellisher of his resume or his credentials.
His resume. Me and my friend actually went to those places and we did research, and these schools have never heard of him.
Hey, Jonathan, what school? What school has never heard of him?
Go to the University of Michigan.
No, he was never at the University of Michigan.
He didn't go there.
There's a school that you said he went to. Go to Wikipedia right now and look at his schools that he taught at, the schools that he learned.
First of all, if you're going to Wikipedia.
Jonathan, hey, Jonathan, calm down for a second, okay?
When you do what I say, you'll see that none of those
all right.
schools.
All right, you goodbye, Jonathan. Goodbye. I don't recall Stanton Friedman ever teaching at a university.
No, I don't believe that's true. Stanton Friedman is a controversial character, mostly because of his staunch belief in the MJ-12 documents. But he is nothing if not a hardworking researcher. He's, I feel he's an extremely honest man, and I consider him a friend.
Jonathan, I know you're gone, but if you're still listening, we encourage people to ask questions and to challenge things, but you don't have to be hostile about it. And I think you got some bad info about Stan Friedman, because University of Michigan, he may have spoken on the campus, but I don't think
right.
he ever claimed to teach there.
You know, and George, the Jonathan call does raise a good issue, and you addressed it properly. It is true that ufology has attracted its share of controversial characters.
And frauds. It's
attracted its share of people who are not telling it the way it really is, people who inflate resumes. All of this has happened. Although I think that probably is true of almost any business that you could imagine, it's more dangerous and undermining to something like ufology. But Stanton Friedman, in my view, is one of the good guys, and it's not for nothing that he is considered kind of the grand old man of ufology right now.
Yeah, it's not. He doesn't have a track record that is hard to track.
And by the way, since it's germane to our topic tonight, I have Stanton's life story and Don Schmidt's life story under option, as well as their books, because we're working on a film about the Roswell investigation. The film's name is Magic Men, and we just got some private investor funding of the screenplay, which I'm writing now and will be done in April.
That's going to be a big year for UFO movies. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff coming out.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a lot of movies. I don't even call them UFO movies. I'd say there's a lot of alien movies. What I am seeing that there's missing is something like, and I'm trying to fill that hole, I'm missing something that's just based on something that's true and tried to deliver in a true way. That's why I want to tell the Roswell story and how these researchers, since the Woodward and Bernsteins of the world would not investigate it, it came down to Stanton Friedman and Don Schmidt, a postal worker and a ex-nuclear physicist. So I think that's really kind of, says a lot about the world that we're living in right now. But I do think that it, like, just to get back to our topic about Hollywood again, that when they try to tell some real stories, for example, Fire in the Sky, the Travis Walton story, Hollywood forced, as I understand it, Tracy Torme, a friend of mine who wrote it, to change the abduction sequence. So the abduction sequence in the film, which is riveting, it's a hell of a piece of filmmaking, but it's not the what really happened to Travis Walton. Did they do that because some secret keepers told them to do it? No, I think they did it because they said that the way that Travis really described it didn't sound scary enough, so they asked for a rewrite to turn it into a little more of a gripping sequence.
Okay, East of the Rockies, Ray in Memphis. Good morning, Ray.
Yes, George. Bryce, it's a pleasure to talk to you all. I hope Jonathan doesn't rely on WikiLeaks too much because it's not all accurate all the time.
No, it's not.
I have a question I've been wanting to ask you, Bryce, for years. But before that, I want to make a comment that
sure.
Dark Skies, to me, man, was a masterpiece. And I had a lot of friends that loved the show as well. But it's like the network sabotaged it by preempting it and moving it around and stuff like that. It made it hard to build an audience.
That's very, you're a wise man. That's what happened.
You know, and I, after it was canceled, I was still glad to see that you were able to wrap the story up the way that you did. I think a reboot of it, the time would be perfect reboot of Dark Skies, especially with the success of the reboots of Battlestar Galactica and V. You know, I think the time would be right for it.
Well, from your especially lips on the to channel like Sci-Fi Channel.
Would you repeat that?
I said from your lips to a network president's ears.
I think it would work on the Sci-Fi Channel. I think you would definitely have an audience for it.
Well, the Sci-Fi Channel aired Dark Skies quite a number of times after it went off the air. I think they gave it two or three cycles. So they were supporters of it at the time.
Well, I hope something comes along and you're able to reboot it. My question is about your series, Mantis.
Yes.
Were you involved with the pilot as well?
No. What happened on Mantis is the... that was Sam Raimi and Sam Hamm, the two Sams,
okay.
Did the two-hour pilot. And then for reasons that I'm blanking on right now, we're not available to continue into the series or had some kind of falling out with the network. I don't actually remember the specifics. And I was hired coming off of Lois and Clark to lead the show at that point.
Okay, I was just wondering because the whole feel of the pilot and the series were totally different, you know. I mean, because it was the pilot was kind of heavily, I guess it was somewhat more Afrocentric
yes.
in nature. And,
well,
and I was wondering because a lot of those elements were removed when it became a series and some of the characters were gone. And
I everything. Can't say that you're wrong. I what happened was that the network, Fox, basically felt that Mantis should work across the board, that it should be as diverse as America, I guess is how they would have put it, and that every character in the pilot was African-American, as I recall, although I didn't work on it. Those were decisions that were just made by the network, and you know, it's easy to debate them now. From my point of view, I was basically hired to do a job and came in and did it, I guess.
Ray, you know your stuff. Appreciate the call.
Thank you,
West of the Rockies. West of the Rockies, Michael and Eugene. Good morning, Michael.
Bryce Sable, I have a question for you, but you remember me. My name is Michael. We went and saw Pink Floyd, and I spent the night at your house in Eugene before I went down to California many, many years ago.
Man, I'm from Eugene.
Brother.
I went to school in Eugene, and I'm a suffering Oregon Duck who had to watch my team lose 22-19.
Oh, I know. That was a shame and everything. But we're born about the same year. I worked with you up at the restaurant on the top of Sylvan Hill.
Oh, yeah, Coco's.
Yeah, remember Coco's, yeah. But I'd like to... I know you have a lot of websites and things like that, but I'll message you. But my question is, we were born about the same year, and we had some pretty in-depth conversation that night, if you remember.
I'm trying to, yeah.
Yeah, if you remember. I've always felt like I don't quite belong here, you know, and it's mm-hmm. like, you know, I always have felt like I'm in kind of a hybrid and an alien hybrid. And I was wondering, what do you think about with the disclosure thing and December 21st, 2012 being the time that they come back.
Well, I mean, that would be a nice, convenient bow to wrap the whole thing up in, that package of disclosure. I don't buy it. I think disclosure is on its own time frame and frankly, is going to happen based on whatever random things happen to cause the events to line up for disclosure. The 2012 thing, I just haven't seen what I would called direct evidence that makes me believe it's going to be any more than just another date. But I could be wrong, but that's my feeling right now.
Michael raises sort of an interesting question. If you that you take the theme of Taken,
yes.
and you believe that there really are, as David Jacobs and some others do, that there may be hybrids among us.
Yes.
How do you identify them? What do you do with them?
Well, first of all, to the uninitiated, the idea that there's hybrids walking among us could just be like, well, these guys are, you know, drank too much of the Kool-Aid. but the thing is, if in fact the Earth is being visited by others that are not us from some other place, then almost anything could potentially be on the table. And I must say that the researchers like Jacobs and others over the years certainly have created a scenario of some kind of hybridization that seems credible. So at least one of these others seems to have that as a part of their agenda for purposes that Jacobs thinks are pretty nefarious, certainly. We speculate about this in AD After Disclosure, Richard Dolan and I do, talking about the notion that if, in fact, there is at least a life form visiting us, as has been reported, that seems to be human-like, then that will... We might have, in disclosure, kind of a new McCarthyism, as people are trying to point the fingers at their neighbors and saying, you're one of them, that kind of thing. I mean, anything is possible after disclosure based on what the fact trail turns out to be.
And I asked you the question about your story arc for Dark Skies about
right.
a happy ending. You would hope for a happy ending in this, too.
I hope for it. I think... anything again is possible. Some people would argue, well, you know, if they've been here since the 40s, they had every opportunity to take us out, and they haven't done it, so they probably aren't going to do it. That would be a good interpretation. But on the other hand, there's so many unknowns in this equation. It's like trying to solve a math problem with six unknowns in it. It's just a little hard. Because the truth is, we don't know what time frame these others operate on. We live in a time frame where, you know, you put a television series on, and if it doesn't have good numbers by the second week, it's canceled. If a movie doesn't open up at a box office hit on the first week, it's pulled. They may live in a time frame of thousands of years. So if there's a plan or an agenda, it may not have been revealed yet.
We're about to go to the end of the program. When you hear the music, it's time to go.
Okay.
I wanted to know if, as a journalist, I mean, when you were working for CNN and PBS,
sure.
I would imagine you could have run into problems for your career if you had pursued these topics too vigorously. Is there any downside in your current career for going after ETs, UFOs, all that stuff?
Well, first of all, I have to say you're kind of my hero because you're a journalist who pursued it actively and publicly and have actually made that work. So congratulations. I wish there were more of you. I wish there were dozens more of you. I think there are less penalties for pursuing the truth about ET, UFO issues when you're a dramatist. Although I will say I have friends who don't share my views and who probably think I'm a little bit off the deep end on this topic, and I think all of us have to deal with that. Richard Dolan and I talk about it in our book, and that we're saying that one of the issues that's going to bring disclosure forward is when the people in this ufology movement, and it is a movement, stop.
We got it. Bryce, we got to go.
Okay.
Bryce Zabel, thank you very much. Best of luck with Dark Skies.
It.
Good. Check out the DVD set, everyone. It's excellent stuff. Good night, everyone.